a number of people that would like to have public comment. Brian, I don't think
we have... Anyone wants to sign up?
Okay, here's a sign-up sheet.
By the globe.
By the globe.
Give our permission to...
All right, we have one person signed up, Mr. Brad.
Brian.
Brian, sorry, Brian. I know Brian. Brian Olson.
He's on.
Oh, he has a All right, just at the beginning. The acoustics in here are terrible. People say they can't hear much. I want to mention.
If you could speak up, too, I understand the acoustics aren't good.
Although Panamensa and Dunwoody,
my background is
a state does serve alcohol until 1 a.m. on weekends, and I'm addressing obviously 4 o'clock alcohol service. And 2 a.m. on weekends, we are not in support of the proposed rollback from 4 a.m. to 2 a.m. for the city of Dunwoody. Having been in the business nearly 30 years in Dunwoody and over 20 years in the city of Atlanta, and being a late night destination spot at both locations, we have years of experience working with late hours. Our Atlanta location did serve alcohol until 4 a.m. for many years. I was there a lot of those nights, so I got a person to witness the goings-on and the lack of alcohol. Changing the last call hour back to 3 a.m. was precipitated by it when the city of Atlanta revised the stop serving hour from 4 to 3, to which we objected at city council meetings. A group of us objected and obviously lost that particular vote. Subsequently, a couple of years later, we ourselves have been a Mezzo back our time opposing the last call to 2 a.m. This was purely a business decision predicated upon economics. The costs of being open during the final hour were for our business, not returned by the revenues. There was, however, during these years of later closing or those years, no increase in problems occurring during the late hours. I had never witnessed, frankly, anything happening between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. might not have happened between New Midnight and 2. And granted, we are not typically a nightclub like an RX. We are a European coffee house that happens to serve alcohol. We may not be an environment which fosters alcohol-related excesses, but I have realized over the years that problems have the potential to arise in any environment where alcohol is served that is not specifically related to hours or the environment or other outside factors. What it does relate to is management. The philosophy which we as citizens of a new city need to espouse, I believe, in Page and I believe, and maintain is rooted in the fact that serving alcohol is truly a privilege, not a right. And this is something that we talk about at each one of our meetings with our staff and with all of the management. It's a lot like operating a motor vehicle in that respect. It's never an automatic privilege. We pay an annual fee for our alcohol license privilege, largely going to the county, and another to the state of Georgia. That license, that privilege, becomes that responsibility. The responsibility including, for example, ensuring that no person under 21 is served an alcoholic beverage, that no person is served a beverage who enters the venue that's so intoxicated, and that no person is served a beverage who appears to become intoxicated while they're in our environment. That's our obligation to the person, that's our obligation to the county, and the citizens that are on the highway, and that's our obligation to ourselves and the government, which gives us the privilege of serving with the license. These parameters apply strictly during every moment we are served. The time of day has no bearing. We license holders, we restaurant borrowers, must comply strictly with serving laws, but the broader truth is that we must work diligently to ensure that every member of our staff complies to the letter. We, Paige and I, have 147 employees, so that, believe me, is a challenge. But it's our responsibility, our obligation, and we're dutifully bound to it. The welfare of our guests, of other drivers on the road in need of our business, depend on it. The later hours for an establishment whose concept embraces that parameter should be the choice of the business owner, because their same rules of strict alcohol management apply at 3:15 a.m., the same as they do at 6 p.m. The judgment of the business owner should support their decision, because there may be people who work late or arrive home from a trip late or simply want to relax and socialize late at night. You know, with all that different schedules, my wife's an early riser and I'm...
Mr. Olson. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
There's a few more. I'm not on the list. May I speak?
Please do, Mr. Brand.
Despite the fact that Councilman Woodstein did not wear his blue coat tonight,
apologize.
I want to be the first to warmly welcome the red team. I think we're going to get something done now.
Thank you, Mr. Brandt. Go red team. So being a little unconventional, anybody else like to take the take 3 minutes? Please raise your hand and I'll gladly invite you up. Yes, sir?
Is this where we're speaking from?
Sure. If you could just come right up here and let us know your name. And
I'm Bob Levy. I'm the owner of Divine Wine Bar Shop and also a resident of Dunwoody for the past, I don't know, since 1975. I can't figure that out. I made a comment last meeting about the alcohol. Excuse me, I'm out of breath because I've ran out of stuff. The alcohol ordinances that were being proposed, and I did some more research on that during the week and looked at the DeKalb County ordinances, the state ordinances, and the proposed one, which came from Sandy Spring. And I'd like to reiterate what I said last time, which was, it's a big mistake to use Sandy Spring ordinances in DeKalb County. I have a list of some of the ordinances from DeKalb County that I'd be happy to share with y'all and meet with you that are completely different and opposite, not opposite, but different than the ones that were proposed in Fulton County. Primarily, I want to go through them all, but I think there needs to be some kind of grandfathering in of, for example, the licenses for the servers, because December the 1st, if you change and make everybody that's currently being a server in DeKalb County come in and apply for a license, you're going to have hundreds of people on your doorstep who can't serve in any of the bars or restaurants because they don't have a license. But they all have DeKalb licenses that were valid as of sometime during the year. So things like that just need to be addressed. And I do have some information I'd be happy to leave and share with you, and I'd also be happy to volunteer to work with people to sort some of the differences out because I have done some research on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I was going to say last call, but yes, sir. Yes.
Sure, please.
Jim Gilmore. I am Gillies, one of the establishments in concern to the Bear City Council. Right now I have 11 days to meet the demands imposed by this new ordinance that we have in constitute at the end of November. That's when it states in that it's supposed to be in. And I implore you to provide two abiding restaurants the ability to remain open a couple hours. The business was built on a structure provided for us. I've been in business over 6.5 years, no violations, no problems, that's public records. This adversarial structure you're coming up with will probably put these two businesses out of business, two restaurants. To make the necessary changes to correct this on a short-term basis, this will allow you more time for evaluation. You can provide a grandfather exemption or eliminate this unsatisfactory condition altogether. The Chamber, of course, the Carl Vinson Institute of Government, business license fees and commercial property taxes will account for more than the total real property taxes paid by Dunwoody homeowners. Businesses are going out quickly. Many of you are familiar with just on a peripheral barnacles, Interest Industrials. They closed the doors last week. Over 20 years of business. And this is not just a cheap comment. I've heard from several people saying, you wait and see when the new year starts. There's a lot of restaurants and taverns that don't have the money for liquor taxes. I won't bore you by reading it and reading it and reading it about the license, the fees. I'm sure the fire department's going to be there in the next week or so to make sure that we're in compliance. That's part of your structure. But I'll leave it with each one of you folks. And I included on the back, Cave County Police Department's permits. You're going to have to, everybody that is an employee has to have a permit. It's in your regulations. They have one, and you're welcome to look at that and make modifications. All my employees have it. I have it on file. Any employee that's hired has to go get that.
I think I got enough, 7 or 8, or should get a couple of that. Oops.
Thank you. Read that over, and I won't bore you with more shit yet. We've been under these constraints for a long time, and we've been abided by them, done a good job for the community. And the second shift people, I don't drink, I don't smoke personally, but the second shift people come in, and you tell them you got an hour, 45 minutes, and we're closing. Well, can we help? Can we help you? They come in now, hard to prove, they take their time, they shoot in the pool, just take a bite to eat, they get all picked up, off work, and they start looking around the perimeter. I would do it like here. Leave it open all the time. They will take their time. The other night, crazy things happened. Saturday night, I was there with my wife. Came in, was a gentleman in the corner of the bar with his head down.
Mr. Gilmore?
I said,
thank you, Mr. Gilmore.
I really love it. Can you please, the council, have a gentleman, Representative Iris?
My name is Victor Blasetti. I'm the general manager of the Firebird in Dunwoody at the Walmart Plaza. I'm not used to speaking publicly, so I made a few notes for myself. We're a full-service restaurant. We've been open, you know, for almost a year now, and we were granted a 4 o'clock license by the DeKalb County regulations or whatever. So I read the ordinances proposed, and the site was procured from the owners based on the fact that this license was unique and it had a value, and in hopes of return on investment, in which they modeled the business, investing $500,000 to do so. If anybody has been there, or if you have not, I would encourage you to come by. We're open till 4 a.m., and I know that that's not what the ordinance states. But simply what I would like to request is that, I don't think it'll be a problem if, or I'm not trying to educate the board, but a simple grandfather clause, which has been in effect for over hundreds of years and used in various cases for city ordinances in particular. We feel that the economic impact, you know, aside from jobs, decreased taxes, the return on investment that we're trying to establish, we're not running in the black as of yet. Most new businesses don't, and there's a period of time that hopefully you have deep enough pockets to get through. And the way that it turned out, and it wasn't by design, but 20% of our business is done between the ages of 2 and 4. And this is huge for us. And we weren't trying to target that segment, but what has happened is the other people in the industry, hotels and restaurants that close at 2 a.m., they need a safe and local place to go, because that's their afternoon. And they come to us, and we serve food right up until 4 a.m., you know, obviously with enough time to close at 4 a.m. And we haven't had any problems whatsoever. We're all up to code as far as health regulations and all of the other equipment things that go along with it. And, you know, I almost look at it as my job is in jeopardy if at this time we roll back the hours to 2 o'clock for us And I don't know how many places there are in the confines that fall into this category, but I can only speak for myself, and I know that, you know, we employ college students, high school students. If we had to cut back on workforce, I'd probably have to take some of the full-time people that work till 4 a.m., plug them into those shifts, get rid of the other employees. So there's a big impact along the line. And if there's a possibility of simply grandfathering us in for that 4 o'clock license and leave things the way they were, I don't think they... I had heard that there might be a concern for other applications to go to the 4 o'clock, to apply for a 4 o'clock license. I don't know if they're available or not, but the point is that the grandfather clause, by definition, would eliminate that from happening if, in fact, there are even licenses available. So, and I also understand that part of the concern was that the 4 o'clock license might encourage what would be called adult entertainment to, you know, be invited for that type of establishment to come into the city. We certainly are not interested in doing anything like that, and would sign whatever we needed to sign to state that we would never go that route.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, second last call. Third last call. All right, we're going to move on from public comment to oath of office. Ms. Fonda, congratulations. We're thrilled to have you here. And I'm not doing the oath, I hope. Judge, welcome.
Glad you want to come up. I, Adrian Bonser.
I, Adrian Bonser.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
That I will faithfully execute the office of council member.
That I will faithfully execute the office of council member.
Of the city of Dunwoody.
Of the city of Dunwoody.
I will do the best of my abilities to support and defend the Constitution.
And I will do to the best of my abilities to support and defend the Constitution.
Of the United States.
Of the United States.
The Constitution of Georgia.
The Constitution of Georgia.
And the charter ordinances and regulations of the city of Dunwoody.
And the charter ordinances and regulations of the city of Dunwoody.
I'm not the holder of any unaccounted for public money.
I am not the holder of any unaccounted for public money.
Do this state or any political subdivision.
Do this state or any political subdivision.
For authority thereof.
For authority thereof.
I'm not the holder of any office of trust.
I'm not the holder of any office of trust.
Under the government of the United States.
Under the government of the United States.
Any other state.
Any other state.
Or any foreign state.
Or any foreign state.
Which I, by the laws of the state of Georgia, am prohibited from holding.
Which I, by the laws of Georgia and the state of Georgia, am prohibited from holding.
I'm otherwise qualified.
I am otherwise qualified.
To hold said office.
To hold said office.
According to the Constitution and laws of Georgia.
According to the constitutional laws of Georgia.
I have been a resident of the city of Dunwoody.
I have been a resident of the city of Dunwoody.
In the appropriate district of the city of Dunwoody.
In the appropriate district of the city of Dunwoody.
For the time required by the Constitution.
For the time required by the Constitution.
And the laws of this state and by the municipal charter.
And the laws of this state and by the municipal charter.
I will perform the duties of my office.
I will perform the duties of my office.
In the best interest of the city of Dunwoody.
In the best interest of the city of Dunwoody.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
Without fear, favor.
Without fear, favor.
Affection, reward.
Affection, reward.
Or expectation thereof.
Or expectation thereof.
Just another short oath I'm required as a minister. I, Adrian Bonser.
I, Adrian Bonser.
A citizen of the United States.
A citizen of the United States.
And being an employee of the city of Dunwoody.
And being an employee of the city of Dunwoody.
Georgia.
Georgia.
And the recipient of public funds.
And the recipient of public funds.
For services rendered as such an employee.
for services rendered as such an employee.
Do hereby solemnly swear.
Do hereby solemnly swear.
And affirm. That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of Georgia.
And the Constitution of Georgia.
And that I am not a member of the Communist Party.
And that I am not a member of the Communist Party.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mayor, other council members, I present District 2 City Councilman Adrian Bonson.
Moving on to item three, ladies and gentlemen, discussion of city implementation. And I'm going to first throw to Mr. Ross for a quick update on the implementation side of things.
The first thing we've got to implement is the being able to build for the liquor license that some of the gentlemen have been talking about. And also, at this stage of the game, we're going to have to not only bill for the liquor license, but it'll include the applications. They're going to have to reapply for that license for liquor. And this is to be done on the 15th of November. And we can start to get revenues into the city of Dunwoody beginning in December. And this is very important that we do that. We've looked at several ways that we can possibly make billing happen. In the absence of Robert and me filling out our computer and sending out bills ourselves, we've looked at two or three other approaches. One being we've had extensive discussions with the DeKalb County folks, and they've given us a proposal wherein we could use their billing services. They would collect the money and then give us the funds that belong to us after paying their fees. We were approached by a third party, and this being a company called E2 Assure, and one of the gentlemen's here tonight, and I'd like to invite him up to maybe give his presentation on what the services that he would offer. This is BJ.
Since we don't have an overhead, I brought each of you all. He said,
yeah, DJ, we've got 10 minutes, is that
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's how it's got to be said from now on. What I'd like to do is run through this real quick. What I propose to show you is that we have a soup to nuts proposal for you that will take care of about, as I discussed earlier with Mr. Boykin, about one-third of your revenue projections, the line items. About one-third of the revenue line items fall underneath this particular area. I'll tell you just a moment about E2 Assure. E2 Assure is a management consulting firm that we do the majority of our work in the government sector and have done a lot of work with various governments around the Atlanta area, also in Florida. Did a little bit of work in Mississippi. I've done quite a few things, several with business licensing operations, but I've actually worked in pretty much every department that a city or a county can have and done consulting work. For this particular project, we are proposing, Mr. Monroe Scott, who's sitting at the table back there with me, Mr. Monroe Scott is the former business licensing manager of DeKalb County. So he knows the regulations pretty well that you're proposing to take on. He's a former business licensing manager. He retired in July with an honorable discharge, if you will. They like him still. It's not anything ugly. He was there 25 years and spent 10 years in business licensing and decided to take his retirement. If you'll go to this slide, the one with the four tablets, four tiles, as Ed was mentioned by Councilman Ross, liquor licenses are the utmost highest priority, and as you'll see, I say must be done ASAP. What we propose to do for you is to mail out the applications, receipt the applications along with the checks, get them, provide them to y'all for deposit. We'll make the deposit for you, or you make the deposit, whichever way. Reprocess them then, review them, condition, approve, or deny based on background checks and the rest of the requirements that are required for getting a liquor license. The state requires that these licenses be issued by 12/31, hence the reason for the time constraints. The issue is, and there was discussion of doing a temporary. In discussions with Mr. Scott, he doesn't believe the state's going to accept anything that says temporary on it. What will have to just be done is an understanding with those businesses that, as was mentioned previously, this is a license that is a privilege. And therefore, anything that's a privilege can be revoked. So it's just an understanding between the city and those businesses can be revoked anyway. So everything's temporary. We will do 100% on-site review of buy-the-drink licensees. This was a conversation that we had. I've had that it's a concern of whether or not the licensees are complying by all of the physical requirements. We will do 100% review of buy-the-drink licensees. It's not a lot you got to do at a BP that's selling beer, okay? But the restaurants, it's important to know what you've got out there. We will continually monitor and work with public safety on that. Y'all interrupt me at any time if you have a question in the middle. Business licenses, very similar situation. You also have a time situation. I consider it a time, in order to have a business-friendly business licensing effort, one of the things a lot of businesses like to do is pay their business license this year, possibly for tax reasons. They may want to put the expenses on this year. I think it would be important to go ahead and help them with that by getting these business licenses also out around mid-November to allow for them to do that. Once again, it's something we can do. I can do liquor licenses by Wednesday if y'all told me to go do it. I could have liquor licenses out Wednesday. On business licenses, they're actually a two-phase thing. They send in an application, we send them an application, the ones that we know of. They will send back in that application. It has data in it that calculates the amount for the business license. We calculate the business license amount. We send them back out an invoice. They then send in the invoice or the check, and then we issue a business license. It's a two-phase thing, so it's quite a bit to do, and we'll take care of that. We propose a one-week invoices out. Once they send their item in, we'll send out an invoice within 1 week. They turn it back around, we'll send out the license within 1 week. Very quick turnaround. We'll also do a monthly delinquent account review and notices and penalty assessments. We'll take care of penalty assessments and do a monthly review of delinquent and put it all in a report to y'all on a monthly basis on where we're at. We'll also send out notices to them reminding them they're delinquent. Franchise fees are another area of business licenses that not everybody talks about, but it's where the cable companies actually pay the city for the number of subscribers that they have within the city limits. And it's something to be worked out with the cable companies. And then that's paid on a monthly basis. And that needs to be monitored as well. The banks in the city pay an annual operating fee for operating within the city. Also, there is also a quarterly that's done by utilities, and we will work with the appropriate utilities as needed. Excise taxes are another monthly thing. That's your fourth tile there. Rental cars, hotel motel taxes, beer, wine, and liquor from the wholesalers that sell to the restaurants and to the your BPs and your Quick Trips, and your beer, wine, liquor retail notification also is all your retail, your stores, you buy the drink. They all pay a 3% excise tax type thing, and that has to be collected, calculated, and made sure that you're receiving the amount that you should be receiving. we will set up monthly reporting either in paper form, which is all DeKalb County does currently. We will set up a form for them to do internet reporting as well. We intend to do a lot of internet with all of these things and allow them to do that. We'll do a monthly exception report for monthly reconciliation and statistical red flag licenses. There's cases where there's places that have paid $4,000 for $5,000 for a liquor license, and they report they sell $250 a month in liquor. Well, that's only $3,000. Why would you have a $5,000 liquor license if you're only going to sell $3,000? It's a red flag, and something needs to be done with that audit. On your next one, I'm going to tell you how we're going to do it. We've got an infrastructure that needs to be set up in order to handle this. We will implement a business licensing management system, whether that's an Access database moving into a SQL, but it'll be something that's able to provide the data to you all, and we'll do all the monitoring. We'll provide Dunwoody-branded communications interfaces. We will do Dunwoody-branded forms and informational materials, and I have examples here of all of the forms that will be needed. They're already branded as Dunwoody. We've already taken care of creating the forms that will be needed by the new city. We'll do internet setup with an informational website, so the FAQs on how to get your business license, all the forms online. We'll set up a telephone and fax system so that those that have questions will be able to reach us, reach Monroe, have an FAQ online, be able to fax license applications in, and we'll set up a P.O. box or use your P.O. box, however you care to do it, for the mailing and receipt of license applications and such. We will also help the city by writing your SOPs, your standard operating procedures, so that this is all documented and there's not some mystery to what's going on or how it's to be done if it ever has to be taken over by somebody else. We will do regulatory assessment and oversight. We'll look at what the state passes on an annual basis down to the legislature, make sure that any changes that they make are reflected back to y'all and given to y'all to make decisions on how you want to do any changes that need to be made to y'all's ordinances based on that. Intergovernmental relationships management. One of the things that has to happen is we've got to do fingerprinting and background checks. We'll look at those intergovernmental relationships, whether it's prior to y'all having the police department, we're working with Chamblee or whomever to get fingerprinting and background checks done. And one of the other things that has to be done is the employees of these establishments all have to get their ID cards for working in the restaurants. And ideally, that could be worked out with one of these cities, too, and I'll help out with that. That's the focus. Monthly electronic record reporting. We intend to, when we get in a license, we get in a check, we get in all the documentation, all the background and everything, we're going to scan it, we're going to provide it to you on a monthly basis on DVD for the city, for permanent records for the city. We'll provide permanent records in an electronic format for you and be happy to also do ad hoc reporting. If y'all have a question, you can feel free and say, how many business licenses did you get this week? I'll be happy to provide that information on a weekly basis or ad hoc basis. Collections, enforcement, and auditing. One of the things that in my work with DeKalb County was there were quite a few businesses that were not licensed in DeKalb County. And Dunwoody had quite a few that were not licensed. Partly because it's so far away from Decatur, I think. It was like we're hiding better out here. One of the things that we will do is we will offer services to go out and do discovery, enforcement, collections of unlicensed business licenses for the city. Some other revenue enhancement activities. It's kind of a revenue enhancement situation. It's unaccounted for business license revenue. Is we will review questionable red flag. There's businesses that will tell you that they have one employee and they make $1 in revenue, and they're renting some shop in a shopping center. And they'll turn them in like that. But somebody's got to talk to them. The DeKalb has accepted that in the past. They were told to by higher-ups. I would recommend y'all not do that. Multi-database business entity searches and analysis. We'll use the internet. We'll use other databases, Secretary of State databases, and find the businesses that should be licensed. Identification of foreign corporations goes without saying as well. And ad hoc auditing. Now, real quick on the timeline, we've laid out here what basically needs to be happening on a timely basis, and you also see all the monthlies there under excise taxes, all the collections that need to be done. Financial institutions, you can see, is kind of a one-time thing on an annual basis. Franchise and cable utilities. But you see, we've got time is of the essence up there at the top because you have the state license requirement where you see the star on December 31st. I won't go into this heavily. But bottom line, the revenue discovery and recovery at the very bottom, you'll see that kind of, that's an annual or full year type thing. But you see where the arrow gets heavy, and that's where, you know, there's less effort being done up above, so resources are used to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Gunning.
Okay. And then if y'all just want to look at the summary sheet there, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Robert.
Oh, sorry, Dan. Very interesting material. Thanks very much. Appreciate also getting most of this in email earlier. What I didn't see is a cost schedule.
Right.
Information about how much each of these services costs and which ones are bundled together, which ones we could choose to do or not do or do later. How do we get past the PowerPoint to the proposal?
Well, I did discuss some costs with Mr. Ross previously on Friday when we had a brief meeting. I'm happy to discuss that. I mean, basically, it's a fee-based thing. There's been a fee that all of these businesses in Dunwoody have become used to paying, which is an administrative fee to the county. It's $200 on a liquor license. It's $75 on a business license. Basically, it's for the administration of those particular things. Now, business license, your average business license in Dunwoody is going to be $500 to $1,000 on a business license with a $75 administrative fee. We are proposing that the administrative fee goes to that which is doing the administration on these licenses, which is us. It's to pay for the administration of that. Now, there's also a $50 fee on a business license. That's not us. That's the application fee, and that comes to the city. And then you have your fees on the per employee basis, which depends on what your NACE code is and which of the six categories you fit into as to how much the multiplier is times number of employees. And then you also have a multiplier, which is more of a partial millage rate that goes against the annual gross revenues. That would be all yours. So I'm not looking for any of that. I'm looking at an administrative fee that pays for my administration on this.
So as a follow-up, I saw you do collection activity as well as part of
that's
this.
Correct.
And that collection activity is
that's as a
funded out of those fees, or
nope.
Is that
a... That's on a percentage basis, because that does take more, and I'm ready to discuss that. One of the things that, I don't know exactly what the agreement was with CH2M Hill as comparison that y'all would be familiar with, but I believe there was a large number in that that was used for collection basis. There's also another company called RDS that does similar type collection. They charge 26 to 35%. My proposal in this proposal is 19% on the collection type work. It's only collection on that year that's collected or any previous year type activity that would be appropriate to be collected. You know, past due monies that would be appropriate to be collected. And not on any future. There's no claim on future money or whatever. On that. That's 19%. Now, for management up, and I'll jump to the next one because you're going to ask it, I'm sure, is on the excise taxes. Okay? These are monthly record keeping. Okay? The state of Georgia has a standard fee that they allow for any of the businesses that collect sales tax, for example, if you ever collected sales tax. The state of Georgia allows you as the hair salon to keep 3% of the sales tax or whatever. We propose we would do that for 3%. Do the management of the excise taxes for 3% of the excise taxes, similar to the collection of sales taxes or any of those other things.
Danny?
Give me the time on when you could start doing this work.
Here's what we're waiting on. We're waiting on a list from the county of the licensees, of their current business licensees and liquor licensees that are within Dunwoody. That's what I understand. Y'all may have received it, or somebody may, I don't know. But that's what I understand is being waited on. As soon as that is dropped, if it's handed to you tomorrow, I can have liquor licenses out Thursday or Friday, liquor license applications out Thursday or Friday. It's not a huge list for liquor. Business licensing, a little bit more time. But I'll have those out. I also, and let me explain something though about the fees. I'm not proposing to have you reimburse me for a single solitary penny for anything. I will pay for postage. I will pay for paper. I will pay for gasoline for an inspector to go out and visit with these restaurants and to do that recovery and discovery. I will pay all my own costs. I'm not going to come to y'all and ask y'all to do that. I'll pay for the internet website. I'll pay for the post office box and the phone systems and those things. This is a fee-based, totally covered by that. I want you to understand, I'm not coming to you for assistance afterwards. But I can do it Wednesday if you give me a list tomorrow or Thursday. I mean, give me a list.
Can you kind of qualify a little bit about how you plan to handle the fingerprinting as a result, as it relates to the liquor license?
Right.
We're on a very short time.
Yep. I was previously, back in the 90s, I was the regional vice president for Barnett Bank in Georgia. I ran the southeastern region of the United States. And the way we handled it with our employees that needed to be fingerprinted, we sent them to the police station to get fingerprinted, and the police station provided that to us. And it could be any police station. Now, for Dunwoody, I would recommend Chamblee or Doraville, whoever y'all are comfortable with doing an IGA type agreement with, so that they would do those background checks and such. Now, there's also private background check companies, and we could investigate that if y'all would prefer doing that. I'm comfortable with, if y'all have a preference also. I'm a flexible person. We're not a big, huge company that's all set in our ways. I'm willing to work with y'all on things that are of concern or issues that we can change. But I would recommend we do an IGA with someone like Chamblee, which is also a place that could do the licenses for the employees of these restaurants as well. I mean, just and do it all there for any of these things that need to be done.
What would you do on, I'm guessing that this isn't all mutually exclusive, all of these different, the liquor licenses, business licenses, they're all separate proposals?
Yes and no. I got to tell you, if you told me right now all you can have is liquor licensing, I can tell you I really don't feel like losing money doing just liquor licensing. I'll be honest with you. I agreed to Mr. Ross that I would do liquor licensing for y'all and do that. I live in Peachtree Corners. My brother lives here in Dunwoody. I've lived in this area for 35 years. My dad named Peachtree Corners, Peachtree Corners. So I love this whole northern area. I'll do it as a labor of love if that's what I need to do for y'all. Yes, I do liquor licensing right now, and we can move forward as needed. But judge me on how I do liquor licensing. I think you'd be quite impressed, and any other option would be ridiculous.
What about your support line or your phone? I think that was mentioned before, but if we whip out liquor licenses, how is that handled as far as questions?
If I have to initially, I'll give them all Monroe's cell phone number. Okay? Monroe, what's your cell phone number? but I can have a phone system set up pretty quickly by Friday. By the time they get them in the mail, I can have a phone system set up that's one single phone line, that's a call it up, and they can get me. Get Monroe. I'll probably set up two or three lines on the phone system, possibly a verbal FAQ that could be, or a line where they could push a couple buttons and have an FAQ faxed to them if they don't have internet capabilities. But it'll send them also to the internet for them to download any of that. As I said in here, we will provide informational materials that are Dunwoody logo, Dunwoody branded informational materials.
And just one other thing. I think when we talked on Friday, you talked about possibly making phone calls in advance of these being sent out.
Glad you reminded me. I'm sorry I forgot that.
And I think also you talked about setting up a website that would be linked to our webpage.
Absolutely.
We could put a licensing webpage in there that would link to yours, and you could have an interactive fill-in-the-blank form.
Yes, sir. Either that or work with your web manager. You know, to put it on your website. Either way, we can either, I'll set up DunwoodyBusinessLicensing.org or .com or whatever and have it be able to do that. Or I'll work with your webmaster to get it on with your own website. Yes. As far as the phone calling, one of the things that's going on right now is this, obviously DeKalb is going to be sending out their liquor licenses soon. And there's confusion. When I worked with DeKalb on business licensing for DeKalb, you know what we found? Inside the perimeter, just inside on Ashford Dunwoody, just inside on Ashford Dunwoody, businesses in there had City of Atlanta business licenses. Okay? Well, that's not the City of Atlanta, just right there. But they had City of Atlanta business licenses, and when the inspectors brought it to their attention, they were in unincorporated DeKalb. They were like, no, I got an Atlanta business license, because their address was Atlanta. So it's easy for businesses to get confused about this sort of thing. It's very important we have that clarification. And what I've suggested that I do is I'll do automated phone calls to the businesses, letting them know that your business license application and your liquor license application is on the way from the City of Dunwoody, and you now license through Dunwoody. And I could do two or three of those to the businesses ahead of time, so that they're aware that they're paying Dunwoody and not to accidentally do DeKalb if DeKalb accidentally sends it out, which there's a really good chance of that.
Do you know, I'm sorry, go ahead, Denny.
You might have covered it somewhere, but just review it again for me. Everybody here, most 99% of people pay this business license or liquor license. There's a 2% that doesn't. Could I hear you say what your proposal was for finding those types of businesses that are out there doing business without a license right now?
Yeah, and I hate to let you know this, but it's a fairly high percentage. It's not a low percentage. Some of the greatest violators of it are in the towers. When you go into the towers, and I'll tell you, for example, I had an office with my previous company in the Summit Building, just inside 285 there. In the Summit Buildings, we were in some executive suites. We had the 14th and 15th floor were executive suites, and there are 34 businesses in there. Four of them had a license, had a DeKalb County business license. 30 did not. Just those two floors. Okay. It's a lack of understanding of who's required to get a business license. Basically, if you do business in DeKalb County, even if you're a sales rep for a company, if you're generating income and you're inside Dunwoody, you're generating income for your company that's credited to your space, then you're supposed to be getting a business license. So it's actually a fairly high number. I don't have an exact percentage, but it's possibly as high as 30% of businesses are unlicensed.
Okay. Well, what is your methodology?
Okay. The methodology, there's different ones. I mean, you can get a hold of different lists of buy lists. Okay, off of the internet. Same list that the copier salesman gets. Okay. When new businesses open up, if y'all have ever opened a new business, you get bombarded by what? Telephone system sales guys, copier sales guys, and water cooler sales guys, or something. Refrigerator. You know. Coffee maker sales guys, you know, the coffee machines. So somewhere they got a hold of the fact that you just opened a business. Okay, there's those kinds of lists available. There's also other governmental lists that are possibly available that list entities as being commercial entities that should be licensed that may not. Now, we have technology, you can use software to match these things up and have it spit out the ones that aren't. The other thing is to simply take the list of businesses that you currently have, sort it by address, and drive down the road and say, license, not on my list, you're a bad guy, you know, and you start to do that, and you find the businesses that aren't licensed.
Okay, on your proposal then, does that come under this 19%?
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's the extra effort that's going to have to be taken. I've got to pay gas to people and
that's
staff.
That's only 19% in the initial year. After that, there would be no percentage coming to you and 100% coming
on out. The businesses that had been found, yes, sir.
Yeah, just a question, just because I'm ignorant of the process. When the servers and the alcohol licenses come in, you said background checks. Is that like a GCIC or an NCIC check?
Are you talking about servers? I wouldn't be handling server licenses necessarily.
Okay, the liquor licenses, you said fingerprints and backgrounds. Is that
it's actually, Monroe, it's a state-level check that's done, correct?
Yeah, well, basically what they do is, we'll be doing the same thing here. We'll provide a copy of the applications. In the past, we've sent the copy over to the DeKalb County. They would approve the whole application, as well as doing the background checks and all of that. And they can send a response to us that they passed. What we would be doing, either through an agreement with other cities to have them do the background checks, and then we would...
It is the GCIC.
It's just
yes,
basically a criminal record check.
Yes, that's all. It is okay. GCIC, exactly.
I have one quick question. On numbers I saw earlier, and from DeKalb, I got a number of 152.
Okay.
And I think and I don't know if the numbers I saw from you, if they were just preliminary or where they came from, but I think it was quite a bit less. Like
it was quite a bit less. The reason is because the list with 152 has a couple of duplicates in it. I also get 152 when I pull the list initially. Okay, I get the same numbers. And it's not that I'm going to ignore anybody that's out there, okay? It's not, just because I said 109, I think, is the number that you may have seen.
Okay.
The 109 is within the zip code areas that are within the city. This city splits two zip codes. You got everything as you go on Perimeter Center West and you hit Fulton County. Well, there's Max and Irma's right there as one that's on the list of 152. It's in that 152. And there's other alcohol establishments like that that are on that side. The other thing is as the city hits Peachtree Industrial, there's establishments on the other side of that that are on that list. When you start to take those establishments out, it's where that number comes down.
Okay.
That what they did is they pulled three zip codes for you and said, here's the number.
Got it. Have y'all done this before? I mean, I see you've worked with DeKalb County and you have a background, but is this process something that you've done before?
I have not run an started up an entire business licensing operation for a new city. Nope. There's not that many opportunities to do that.
Never outsource or anything, other than it sounds like
DeKalb. The only thing I would tell you is I have a proposal into DeKalb County right now to outsource their business licensing to me that was requested of me. But that's the only other opportunity.
And you work with Richard Stogner at DeKalb County, is that
very closely, sir. That's who I report to. I currently have, for full disclosure to y'all that don't know, I currently have a contract where we are doing management consulting for DeKalb County. We've been there. Ken, my business partner, has been in DeKalb County for 2 years doing that. We've worked with, how many of the departments, Ken? 24 to 30 of the departments. 26 of the departments in DeKalb County that we've worked with doing process improvement, activity-based costing and management, Six Sigma lean type, you know, Lean Six Sigma type work. And right now we have a contract where we're working with Recorder's Court to try and fix some issues there and help them with that. So that's where I'm at right now with DeKalb County.
Right, Denny.
And I report to Mr. Stogner as an answer to your question.
Okay.
One question for legal. Number one, is this an item that needs to be put up for a competitive bid?
It would not have to.
State requires us to do, to put up a competitive bid, it's public works contracts and roads contracts, and this would probably not fall within either one of those.
Okay. Second question is for you, BJ. What type of the length of contract are you looking for here?
You know, I've talked to, you know, I would recommend at the shortest a June 30th kind of thing. Okay, where we could transfer everything over. The way business licensing works, if I showed you how revenue comes in on business licensing and how it works, is you send out business licenses, a big bulk comes in about 2 months after you send them out of the revenues and the applications, and then it starts to go down, and then it does this. Okay, on the downward, about the end of June is where it gets kind of calm, and it could be transferred over to y'all. My understanding is that the way y'all were looking at doing some of the contracting is to do one year with two renewals. I'd be perfectly happy to have something that steady. You know, any of y'all that are businessmen understand that. But if it was something that y'all wanted to do and say, look, just through the end of June and then we'll revisit this, I would understand. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend piecemealing too much. Here's where I mentioned liquor licensing, just doing liquor licensing. For me to set up, I got to do all this overhead stuff. Any of y'all that set up a new business, I got to go set up an entire system to handle 150, 109 licenses, do a bunch of database. I got to go sign a contract for a phone system for a year or whatever. I got to go do these things, and I'm going to have this overhead that's going to eat everything. I'm being straight up with y'all. It would hurt. So I'm willing to do it as a labor of love, but that's what it would be. So I would ask for at a minimum a June 30th type.
But you would be willing to work on the license alone just to get your nose under the tit, right?
Yes, sir.
The scope of that, just for your information, if you did the license alone, we had 109 applications, and if there were an equal number of liquor licenses and an equal number of beer and wine licenses, it would be about a $15,000 contract we're talking about here, just to give you the sizing of it.
You can understand, by the time I pay somebody to develop some database-type things and do some other things and copy a bunch of paper and pay for postage and pay Monroe, okay, expensive, and pay him, it's you know, that goes away pretty quickly.
Okay. Thank you very much. You have one more, Robert.
You'd mentioned, and I'll tell you why in a second, you'd mentioned another company that does similar like type activities.
Yep.
What's the name of that company?
RDS.
RDS, right. The reason that I ask that is that we've got...
They don't do business licensing department setup. Okay. They do the collection.
Oh, okay.
They don't do... There's nobody out there that does business licensing setup and outsourcing that I know of at all. You know, now I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to try and do this in 27 other cities as, you know, in the future. But, you know, as long as I invested the money to set this sort of thing up.
Well, and the reason I ask is we've got a quote for similar services from DeKalb County.
That's right.
We have a second quote here. If we can find a third quote, I think that satisfies the need to take, you know, to evaluate multiple bidders and judge their service offerings and their costs. So I would suggest that we try to find another, and if this isn't the company, I suggest we try to find somebody else who offers as a service and get one more proposal, and then we should have the information we need to pick one and move forward.
Yeah.
The issue I have, though, is the data. Right now, do we have the data that we need to go forward if we want to do our own license?
Supposedly coming in on Wednesday.
We've asked for it a number of times. Mr. Van Gundy has said that he could have the notices out by Wednesday or have the data in the very near future. DeKalb County also could control their own data. It seems like we're at a pinch that we're waiting on the data.
If I understand, you would have the data that would be coming from us. Right. As soon as we get the data, we're giving it to you.
Yes, sir.
And, okay. And I can help you with facilitating that with DeKalb County.
You got some uncles from New Orleans, or
I mean, Mr. Stock. I've recorded Mr. Stocker twice.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Thank you. All right. Next, let me call on council, maybe start us off on the contract workings with Boyd.
Several of us have met with Boykin to discuss the contract. We're still under negotiations. We have another meeting tomorrow morning, which we're hoping that we can finalize all the terms of the contract, at which case, assuming we can come to an agreement on the final terms, we'd be ready to present it to council shortly thereafter.
Okay. Great. Anybody have any questions regarding that? Robert?
My only question is, in addition to the contract, I guess there is, you know, we got copies of a proposal a week or 10 days ago. Each of these represents a question or an issue that I had. Are we going to get another one of these that matches what we're signing up for?
Yes.
And
that is appendix to the contract, so I consider that part of the contract.
Okay. So, but this isn't Exhibit A, right?
That one itself will not be.
Okay, because there's references to an Exhibit A in the contract.
Right. This will, whatever this one ends up becoming,
right,
will become the exhibit.
Oh. All right. Okay. Because then this needs to get very skinny. This has way too much stuff in it to be attached to a contract, as these are the services we shall provide. So but otherwise, I mean, you know, I think we're headed down the right path.
Can you secure my copy back for me?
It's in the car.
Great. Then?
Yes. The 18 pages that I have here, that in essence a replacement of what Robert is talking about?
No. No, the 18 pages you have there is the base contract that I sent out This is their proposal. The proposal will be an attachment to the contract. This is what defines the scope of services. The scope of services is not actually defined in the base contract. The base contract basically has the T's and C's.
Okay. And what's the date on that that we're looking at?
This one's October 10.
That's what I've got here. Yeah. I think there is another one floating around. There's another date on it.
That's right. That is the last official one.
Yeah. So the other one is considered obsolete?
The previous one, yes.
Yes.
Yes. And even this one now is becoming obsolete.
Okay.
Okay, so you'll get that out to council?
Yes, I'll get it out once we finalize, yes.
Okay. Yes, Rob?
One last question. I see some folks from Boykin who are here. Are they on the clock? Are we paying them to be here? I'm just curious. Are they going to bill us for coming tonight?
I don't have that answer.
Theoretically, they probably could.
Okay.
Yeah, just if we sign the contract.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions? Danny, on I'm going to go over insurance, comprehensive insurance.
Brian and I met with the Georgia Municipal Association and with Willis, who's an insurance brokerage firm, a nationwide insurance brokerage firm, to discuss the insurance that the city will need. And we've received back two proposals, which I sent to you, each of you, by email. I don't have extra copies of it for you, but these proposals that have been issued are actually about half of what we have in the budget, which is good news. There are two pieces of it. One of it would be when the police force comes on board, and we've made a couple of assumptions here. We made an assumption that we're going to have 35 officers just as a way to get a proposal in. Obviously, to the extent that we have more or less, the proposal will be modified. The policy would be modified accordingly. And we also assume that each of the officers would have a car, which may or may not be the case, depending on how the chief of police wants to do that. And the big piece of this thing is the law enforcement insurance. That's $165,000 a year for life for insurance for the police portion of this thing. As far as the other parts of the insurance, is about a $67,000 number. And that also had three cars in it. I wasn't sure if any of the city manager was going to have a car or anything, not knowing what that agreement was going to be. But just for planning purposes, we got about a $230,000 insurance bill. I think our budget that we had originally had about $400,000 in it, so we can save a little bit of money, it looks like, on insurance. I've also spoken with the city manager for Johns Creek, who was not on board when they did their insurance piece of it. There are actually two people that do this sort of thing. One of them is Travelers, and one of them is, I think, the Georgia Municipal Association. And all the other municipalities have gone with the GMA, with the exception of Johns Creek. And what he suggested, and I think it's a good idea, is that we not make a decision finally on this matter until such time as the city manager comes on board, and let him be part of that decision-making process, because he may have some ideas that we don't have right now, and this is something we need to really give careful consideration to. The insurance would start, in fact, whenever we wanted it to start, so that it could be retroactive to September 17th when we were, actually the date we were sworn in, or it could be retroactive to October 15th, any date that we want to make this insurance. Even though we're not a city, GMA's agreed to do that and make this enforced as of the date that we select. I'm also getting some diligence from a person that I know very well that's been in the insurance business with one of these, with the Willis Group. He just retired, and I'm passing this proposal by him because I want to get his input as well as a matter of due diligence for us. So my recommendation on this is we need to get it as soon as possible, because we're sitting up here without any coverage at all on the one hand. On the other hand, I want to make sure that whatever we do is something we can live with and our city manager can live with. And that's my recommendation.
Excellent. Any questions, Brian?
Did that include workers' comp?
Yes, I think so. Okay. Yes.
I guess, City Attorney, would you look back at, would you recommend doing the retroactive back to September when we're sworn in, just to take a risk-averse policy, or, I mean, was that...
That would be my recommendation.
Does that need more money?
Well, we pay, basically it's a year-long, this is a, the terms of this are for 1 year, and basically what the year ends in May 1st is where they have the year end set up. But I would, if we started on September the 15th or September the 17th, that would be the end of the year. We'd have to pay for a year starting that date. So we'd have to look and see if there's any risk out there, you know, and I would let counsel recommend that. He doesn't feel there's any risk out there for the council in particular that's been making decisions here, then we could set it for a later date. Save us a little bit of money.
Danny, a couple of questions just to clarify. It would be a prorated basis. Yeah.
It's a prorated. Each month that we have it would be 1/12 of the number you see here.
Okay. Or whatever part of that month.
Right.
Due date for additional payment.
January 1.
I'll be darned. Just for a point of information, the budget that our last budget that we looked at for expenses, we had 455.
Yeah, I knew it was a number north of 400.
So everybody should be happy with that.
Okay.
Coming in under budget here.
Any other questions on the insurance part? All right, move on. Mr. Taylor, you want to give us the police?
Okay, real quick on police. Basically, a lot of this is going to be, again, dependent on when and who we bring on as a chief. But right now we've got a task force of a couple of unpaid consultants and part of the police task force from Citizens for Dunwoody, just gathering data to present to the city manager and the police chief when we get on board. Right now we've got three vendors out there that are identified under state purchase programs for cars. I received another one today that hasn't been evaluated yet, but we'll look at that in the next couple of days. Also I've met with vendors for radars. The mayor and I are going to meet tomorrow with another vendor for firearms. Radios and auxiliary equipment, we've talked with those folks and just basically have a good staff report for when the manager and police chief come on board. Again, we're going to, again, present the options to the city manager and the police chief when they're on board. Those folks are going to be, you know, the operational folks. They'll just take those as recommendations and then come back to us for budget questions with that. That's essentially where we're at.
Nice. Any questions? Yeah. Any?
I just want to make one point. You know, this is a big part of our budget. We all know that. And we also all know it's the number three point that we did. We did a poll. It was the number three concern that the people here had. I think one of the things we want to make sure is that you know, the police chief, the city manager, all know that we have a budget, and the budget must be complied with as we go forth here. So, you know, before they go buy Cadillacs and things like that, we need to know exactly what we're spending it for, and they need to know exactly what we have to spend also. I just want to make that point clear to everybody.
No doubt. Thank you, Danny. Any other questions on police? All right. Anything else I missed on implementation? Anybody wants to cover? If not, we'll move. And Robert, let me throw it to you on city branding. Why don't you give us a quick...
Yeah. It did occur to several of us a week or so ago that we were going to need signs that said, "Welcome to Dunwoody. We're now entering Dunwoody." And our goal would be to get those put up as soon as practical after December 1st. We've got some talent in Dunwoody, of people who are designers. One of them is somebody who was approached me months ago to say when it was time to start branding, she would love to help us. Her name is Debbie Smith, and she's done a lot of work in the community. So she reached out to me again this week. And she has agreed to put together a small citizen task force of folks who do this for a living and help try to establish a brand
some sort of branding elements for Dunwoody. My sense is that branding is something that takes a long time, right? That you build on it, that there are messages and they evolve. And so this is not something that is going to result in, here's artwork for a sign, right? This is a journey, right? And a lot of citizen input goes on. Obviously, artwork for a sign is one of the first things we need. So we will ask them to help us do that, but she has agreed to help put together a group. So she'll send out a call for volunteers to help with that effort. And the goal will be for them to begin to help us define the image of Dunwoody with a lot of deference to the images that have gone in the past, right? The farmhouse is obviously one of our images and figures large in our history. But at any rate, she's agreed to help do that. We need some help. So I don't see any reason not to empower them to go off, talk, meet, design, and then bring stuff back to us for our consideration. So that's what I'm going to suggest that we do, and that we are, as part of that, going to ask them to help us design signs to put out. We've actually counted the number of signs we will need. Some of them are larger roads, and we'll need bigger signs, and some are neighborhood signs, and we'll obviously want something more modest, but they've agreed to help do that, and I'd like us to get them off to do it. Don't know how long it'll take, but at some point they'll be prepared to come back to us and make a presentation.
Anybody have any discussion, Tom?
One thing these discussions, Mr. Mayor, when you go to talk to Mayor Jenkins in Doraville, they have a welcome to Doraville sign on Tillingville Road in Dunwoody. You can ask them just to take that thing back. I looked at that sign today as I drove by, and I just hope this branding effort does a little bit better than Doraville's, because Doraville's is a nice place to live. I know.
I can actually comment on that Doraville sign. It's on the right-of-way at the border. The Doraville border goes not to the middle of the road, but it goes to the right-of-way on that side of the street. So technically, that sign is within the borders of the city of Doraville. So that's my subdivision. I know that sign. I've had complaints about that sign. That sign is within the city limits of Doraville, you know, because of the way the line is drawn right there.
All right, anybody else want to comment on this, Danny?
My first question is always, what's it going to cost? You know, is the task force a big group, a volunteer group?
They're a volunteer group. It's not going to cost us a thing. They will design a sign, and she's also agreed to go out and find fabricators for it, so that when she comes back, not only will she have a design, she'll presumably have some costs to produce whatever design she's come up with. She knows that our budget is not extravagant, but she also knows that we've got some design standards that are part of the overlay district, and I think she's going to try to come up with something that is sensitive to, you know, the Williamsburg look, the wood grain look. You know, I don't know what they're going to come up with, but they'll clearly know that you know, we're going to have to approve whatever money gets spent, and in fact, you know, it's likely to go on one of our credit cards until we've got some money to pay it, right? I mean, so we'll make sure they know that.
Just a follow-up question on that. It was thrown around about the current city seal, or, you know, the Dunwoody street signs that we have right now. Is that something that we don't even want to consider, or what?
I mean, I would throw those to them, and I'd say, here are obviously some brands that exist and that have worked well, right? The Dunwoody Homeowners Association owns one of those brands. The Dunwoody Preservation Trust owns one of those brands. Those ought to be part of what they look at. So I would not have them discount anything.
I mean, you go to every street corner, and it's got a Dunwoody sign on it. On the street corner already there, you know, and it's the colors and everything else is something that everybody, and of course the farmhouse is the icon of Dunwoody in my estimation, so it's just not a sign designer, that's for sure.
As most of you know, the Dunwoody Homeowners Association did an extensive amount of work in putting together a branding effort a couple of years ago. In fact, I think, Ken, when you were mayor, when you were the czar of the DHA, I think you started that. And I've talked to a couple of people that were involved in that, including Chip Franzoni today, as well as Gordon Jackson, who were involved with it, and a couple of people that were involved in the design aspects of that. And they went through discussions group. To say it was a focus group type of effort or anything would probably be an overstatement, but they did go through, and what they looked at is, we've got two stakeholders in Dunwoody. We've got citizens of Dunwoody, the residents, and we've got the business community, which is, of course, the Perimeter Center is primarily that business. And Perimeter Center, PCID, has its own branding already, and they have the archway with the roads. It's like the outside of a perimeter with an exit there for the Perimeter Mall, Perimeter Center area. I think a lot of money has already been invested in that. If you see all the street signs, they already have street toppers on them already. And people have bought those street signs, and I can't see us ripping those signs down in favor of doing another image here. And quite frankly, although I think branding is an important thing, we have a brand that we can start with. If you look at the rationale, and I talked to a couple of people that were involved in that, they viewed the farmhouse as being the epicenter, not the center, but the epicenter of everything that has happened in Dunwoody. Everything is kind of revolved around that farmhouse, with the two Sproul families being part of that. And if you look at it from another perspective, this is just the input that I got from talking to people. All roads lead to the farmhouse in Dunwoody. All the roads lead, whether it be Chamblee Dunwoody or whether it be Mount Vernon, Ashford Dunwoody, all these roads eventually lead to the farmhouse, which is the center of our community. And that's the way they came up with what we have now. Does it represent a skyscraper that shows the business part of this thing? No, it does not. And you know, I've been involved in branding type things in the past. My feeling is, at this juncture, we'd be well served to keep what we have now, to spend more time spending to the issues of sorting our government, as opposed to spending a lot of time trying to come up with another icon for Dunwoody, because I think we're well served with what we have, and that would be my thought on this subject.
You know, I don't think we have to spend a lot of cycles on it. We've got a lot of other things to do, but we have some citizens who've offered their services, and I think we need the services. And if they come up with something and we don't like it, we just don't have to use it. You know, so I would send them off to do this, and I will thank them for their efforts. And if they come back with a design that looks very similar to the sign toppers, more's the better. You know, but I'm no good at this stuff. I know a lot about a lot of things. This is not one of them. So I'll defer to the people who know this stuff.
Yeah, I think, Robert, why don't you do have the committee get together and see what they come up with. What we don't have is a welcome sign. We have Bill Grant, who's put up welcome signs. So I think the farmhouse certainly is the brand, and just have them run and see what they come back with.
I agree with Robert. I think we can dribble that ball, yeah. and do all the other things real easily. Hand it off to them, let them come back and report to us, and then we'll go from there. But with just the idea is, remember that farmhouse is the icon, and we got street toppers right now, so it has to be the same.
And there is a company that is doing some extensive work for the Dunwoody Preservation Trust now. We're redoing the signage at the farmhouse as we speak, so that we can have a sign that would be more flexible in terms of not only showing the people who are housed there, but also be able to show the events that are taking place in our city in a way that conforms with the overlay district. And we're also replacing all of the historic signs throughout the community. And there is a gentleman named Wolf, and I can't pronounce his last name, but he's a German guy that has done a lot of sign work. He, in fact, did the toppers that we might want to talk to there.
John. Last night I did a little research on city branding, and the farmhouse is the icon of the city. There's no doubt. Everybody knows it. It's the city of Dunwoody. The question really came to me is, what does the city of Dunwoody mean to the people who don't live here? What does the symbol of the icon of the farmhouse mean to the people who want to live here someday or want to do the research? The next thing on the agenda is the city website. The website is all about branding. It's more about who we are, what we want to be, where we're going. I think that the farmhouse, no doubt, is going to be part of our brand. But it's also the ideas and the thoughts that go behind it. I'm open to having people look to see you know, what we want it to be. What does it mean to be Dunwoody versus what does it mean to be Sandy Springs or Doraville or any other city? What is Dunwoody? We need to start focusing our ideas and thoughts and try to feed that brand what it we want to be, where we want to go. And I think our website will use the assistance of the volunteers to help feed that brand.
So it sounds like you're suggesting a farmhouse with a bunch of apartments behind it.
All right, we'll move on. That was a
school trailer. School trailers is a better backdrop.
Apartments and trailers. All right, any other discussion on this? We'll move on. City website, Mr. Hannigan.
The website is still currently the interim city website. Is being developed by Jay Kapp of Kapp Concepts. It will be up by November 1st. It will have a calendar for city events. It will have email addresses and contact information for all city employees, for the city council, the mayor, city manager. We're looking to see what else do we want to have on there. For example, all of our city ordinances that have passed. Do we want to have document management location? We're still talking internally to see what we want to have on that website, but November 1st it will be up. It's still in development. I can be happy to tell you that we have our email system. It just went live today. Everybody sitting at this table now has an email address. Mine is john.hennigan@dunwoodyga.gov. First name dot last name at dunwoodyga.gov. They're live now. Problem is, the city council doesn't know exactly how to retrieve the messages yet.
I sent one and got one.
All right, well,
I didn't get one yet. Somebody said
I tried to charge my ID code. Yeah, it's brand new. We got it less than 6 hours ago. So the email is starting. It will be live come November 1st with the website. We'll all be published on our Dunwoody email addresses at that time. But that's a success, and that'll be up soon.
Yep. First name dot last name at dunwoodyga.gov. Except for myself, which I don't know what is mine.
Ken dot Wright.
Trying to throw some people off here, John. Work with me. All right. Yeah. Thank you. That's right.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Mayor at Dunwoody. Okay. Any other city website discussion? We will move along. All right, City Attorney Mr. Anderson, we are going to discuss Chapter 4, alcoholic beverages.
Yes, we had numerous inputs on the alcoholic beverage code. We have gone through and made some revisions to the code, which we'll put out on the various websites that we have for people to look at. We will still look at the issue of whether the state will accept a temporary permit and how to do the employees. One of the plans that we have been talking about, if the state would allow it, would be to have the anyone that had a permit that did apply by a certain time to extend, allow their permit to be operational in 2009 until the city has an opportunity to either grant or deny the license. That is one thought we have. We'll go and see if that will fly with the state. Several of the particulars they had about DeKalb County have now been modified to more or less agree with the DeKalb County code. We threw in the microwave. This will all be available online tomorrow for people who are still looking at anyone else's comments, and we'll be open to look at them and possibly incorporate them.
Right, did everybody get a chance to read the Blue Line version? Yes.
It's on my website.
All right, Robert, we're getting your hands. If you have a kind of happy.
Okay, great. Right. I'll read it.
All right. Any discussion on that? We'll move on. Okay.
Let me ask one question. This came up at an earlier meeting, and I won't belabor it if the will of the council is to leave it alone. But one of the things that I'd suggested in an earlier meeting was that perhaps we take out of our alcohol ordinance the areas that deal specifically with Sunday restrictions.
Right.
There are a bunch of Sunday restrictions on alcohol sales that we inherit from the state. I'm content to inherit those from the state, but I don't know that I feel compelled to add a lot of additional wording that either on top of that. So I would be just as happy if we struck those. And if we're talking about, you know, impacting the alcohol industry and community by rolling back their last call, one of the things we can do to balance that a little bit is perhaps take off some of the restrictions that some of them face today with Sunday alcohol sales. Now, most of the restrictions are state restrictions. This is not going to allow people to go to the grocery store on Sundays and buy a bottle of wine or a six-pack of beer, because that's controlled by the state. But if the state lifts that ban, I'd love for us to be able to take advantage of that and not to have restrictions here that supersede or go beyond what the state does. So, as far as I'm concerned, I would just as soon have them skinny this down, make it simpler, and just say that we'll abide by the state's Sunday restrictions. Again, I don't know what the rest of you, how the rest of you feel about it.
I agree with you, Brian. What's the legal?
Well, the legal requirement is there are various state statutes that deal with Sunday ordinances. We can tone them back, as Robert's suggesting, but we still have to abide by them. It's right. Just whether or not, you know, how many we actually put in the ordinance is what he's talking about.
So if the state this year repealed, say, they're working on last year's Sunday sales, so we can go to Costco and get some wine on Sunday, would then, the way it's written now, we would have to go back to ours?
The way it's written now, we would have to go back and do modifications and amendments to the code the way it is written right now. That's correct.
Yeah, I'd like to see then.
What does the process take? What's the time process on that?
You know, you guys, if you wanted to, could do it in 48 hours. It's an ordinance, so you have to have two meetings for it to occur.
So what's the reason for the redundancy? Anything?
Just well, we have in there one of the requirements is to sell on Sunday, it's like for an eating establishment. The state requirements, actually, you have to have 50% of your revenues come from food.
Right.
That's in there, actually, at 60% in there, because DeKalb County has a 60% requirement, and we heard many people wanted to keep what DeKalb had, so we actually have the 60% instead of the state-mandated 50%. It's just some of those requirements have been incorporated into the ordinance. You could reference the state and trim down. That's very possible.
Steve?
Could you give us a bullet point by bullet point for the people that aren't aware of the code, the laws, what those differences would be so that we'll know what we're signing on to?
Talking about the differences
between the state and what we have now.
I can go through and do that and send it to you.
Okay.
Happy Hour is another one. But yes, I can go through.
That's state law, no happy hour, right?
The actual happy hour ordinances are not delineated as such.
I wasn't concerned about changing everything that didn't match the state. I was focused on the Sunday sales. So,
yeah, that's all I'm asking.
Right,
and just the Sunday part.
Right.
Just the Sunday part.
Right, right. Right.
Okay, well, let's get send that red line version out.
Sure. I can show you everything. I haven't done Sunday.
Yes, Danny.
I think it's something we can look at, but for simplicity, you know, if somebody lives here in Dunwoody, does business here in Dunwoody for the citizens, you know, that's something that, you know, the old business have referred to the state laws is nice and dandy, but where do you find that? Where they'll be able to find our laws, our ordinances, right on our website that we're standing up, and they can go in there and get the exact details. So, you know, I don't see where it really is a problem. Putting the details in our ordinance so that our citizens and our businesses can both read it right out of off of our webpage rather than try to track down wherever the state law is on that.
Well, I mean, from my point of view, the issue isn't that we put them in here. The difference is that we don't hold the same standard, right? Again, most of us have said that we want to be business friendly and we don't want to have government interfere any more than necessary in what people do with their time, and so I'm just anxious to lighten the load. And if there are restrictions we can take out, I'm game to take them out.
So our restrictions we can take out.
Yeah.
As long as still reference, yeah. As long as the restrictions that are required by state.
Yes, right. Exactly. Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Any other discussion? Yes, John.
Talking about business friendly, what we asked about a grandfather clause for the two businesses. What is the option of that? Is that an option for us? How does that work?
Okay. On a grandfathering clause, you can write words that create a grandfather type clause in there. What you do with that, however, is that now you're creating a right where one did not exist, which, you know, if you want to do that by policy, you may. One of the things it does do is that those establishments then, say you grandfather them into a 4 o'clock, say they come into hard economic times, they of course might try and change the business model, which is one possibility. Also, when you have such grandfathering clauses, you do open the door for other establishments to try and use as a wedge to try and get in. But hopefully we can craft it in such a way that that would not be a likely scenario. Does that answer your question?
So it's possible. It's just it opens doors. It opens the possibility to other things that we may not want.
Correct.
And challenges, I think, from anybody that would come back in.
Okay.
Do you have any scenarios where grandfathering has happened in Georgia?
Or you can grandfather. Problem is, say you do grandfather in, and now they have a 4 o'clock license. The same owner then can try and change the business model completely.
Yeah. Eddie.
Can grandfather and put a contingency in there that they don't have the right to do anything except what they're currently doing?
That's much more tricky. That's just starting to now go on their property rights.
All right, yes, Ms. Bowman.
And then is that sold, if the business is sold, will they still be covered by the grandfather clause?
Well, that depends on how it's written. But they could also not do it by just selling. They could just change the business. But it can be crafted to the point where you try and minimize that possibility, but it's very hard to near impossible to craft anything that's foolproof.
All right, any other discussion? Number 2. Discussion of proposed Chapter 9 ethics.
So, several things were brought up on ethics. One of them was a concern about how to do a preliminary evaluation of whether an ethics charge is truly granted. We took a look at some of the ethics codes around, and we found 4 ways that have been done by various other entities. One is that the city manager or mayor takes the initial crack at it. Another one is there is a committee appointed for each one. That's just a 3-man committee. They just do a quick thing, and if they find merit, they go and give it to the board. Another one has the mayor of the pro tem go and do it. And the final way we found is that the board itself does a 2-phase. It can do a preliminary evaluation before it actually does its own board. Just 4 ways that we found just looking at various ethics codes around Georgia.
Discussion. Robert.
I like the last of the 4. Just send it to the ethics board. Let the ethics board do a preliminary hearing, decide if there is enough evidence to accept it.
Right.
And if not, they throw it out and it, you know, it has 1 news cycle. if there is some merit, then it you know, it'll get a full investigation and testimony and all the rest of that. So that's that seems to me to be the most straightforward one.
Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts?
Yes, Danny. I agree.
Well, you know, on the ethics thing, you know, and the legal people that I've talked to have said that, you know, basically one of the big things this is going to be used for is political. The ones I've talked to said that's the number one reason it's going to be used. So when you start to take a look at this, you know, we've got a document in our charter. It's about less than 2 pages, I think. And then here we've got 39 pages, I think it is.
32.
And, you know, again, I get back to the stuff about, you know, perceive. The word perceive. You know, big word. Perceived by who? You know, by anybody? So anytime you're doing this, I think I've worked for the federal government, so has John. This is longer than I have, in the Marine Corps. It's bigger than I had in the Marine Corps, and you're pretty good. I would also submit to you that I bet you, I'm not afraid of mentioning names here, but DeKalb County's probably got one of these. And I would like you to go around to the citizens of Dunwoody tomorrow and ask all of them if you think that there's, a compliance with ethical behavior in DeKalb County government. I think you'll find it astonishing that very few people would agree with you that there is. So this is a document. It's got all kinds of fluff in it. It makes us look good. Hey, we really got a real ethical thing here. But does it really do what we want to do? Does it really make all of those of us that are looking for all of the citizens out there ethical behavior? Or does it just sit here? Or do we need to take a look at what is important in ethical behavior and what is important in quote-unquote political retribution behavior? Something you need to look at before you step off here, because, but by just sitting here, passing this whole thing, everybody says, wow, look at what those guys did. That's, I doubt seriously is required. I doubt seriously there's anybody that can come up with something in here about anyone and have the perception that that's that type of behavior. So I think before we pass this document, we need to have a document that does what we want it to do, promote ethical behavior by all the city employees that work for the citizens, without coming through with 32 pages of boilerplate and things that make you look good, but really don't mean anything.
Hold on a minute, John.
Well, perception is based on the common man. The common man is going to be on our board. We are going to be putting citizens from Dunwoody on the board to do the perception of what those 32 pages say. So I trust the citizens that they can perceive what is good, what is, what is wrong, and that they will be able to ferret out what is a politically motivated complaint and toss those that are as such.
Danny?
I think any document that you receive is only as good as the people that are enforcing that document. And it's incumbent upon us to get the right people to do that. I totally disagree with you in terms of this being a document of fluff. It's a document of necessity. It's a document that is required by our state, by the Georgia Municipal Association. This meets the standards that it has. And it's what other cities, new cities, have in their infinite wisdom incorporated into their code of ethics. It's going to require a couple of other things too, other than enforcement. It's going to require training. The people to understand this document are going to have some training, and that's true. And this presupposes that that training would be held on an annual basis. That was a recommendation that it encountered. This document is only as long as it needed to be to meet the standards that the state set forth. It's not a paragraph more or less than that, and some very knowledgeable people worked in the task force group to put this together. Not to create a facade, not to create a fluff, but to create a document that we, as a council, of all people, we need to embrace this, because we're going to have another 50 or so people out there that are going to be working for us, and another 500 people are going to be working for the city in some type of subcontracting basis, that we want to make sure are held to the same standards that we want to be held to. And that's what I feel about this document. It's not any, I'd love to have a one-page document, but this tries to anticipate the things that a one- or two-page document would be left to interpretation, and that in and of itself, I think, would not serve our community well.
Dave? Well, I'll make 2 points. Number one, and let me just tell you, there'll be nobody that will work for this city that will understand and have this committed to memory for 30 pages.
Not to memory.
Not one person. Number two, John, perception. The perception is going to be, if it gets out to any one of us or any other employee, it's going to go in the press immediately. And whether that person is ever exonerated or not, the perception will already be out there. Just a point to think of.
Any other thoughts?
I think Adrian.
Adrian?
Any other comments, Robert?
Yeah, I'm sympathetic to Denny's point that this is really long and fairly elaborate. But my sense is that they have gotten long and elaborate out of necessity. That earlier ones were shorter, and that the ability to abuse the lack of detail and to therefore level charges against people in political ways because there wasn't a lot of detail. I think the GMA put together such a long, lengthy document, I think is a defense for what you're talking about, which is they wanted to spell it out real clear, real specific, all of the items, so nobody could make a claim that wasn't, they didn't have, you know, that assumed, you know, that these large sentences would cover it. So I think this actually helps by defining in somewhat more detail exactly what is and is not acceptable behavior. So I, again, like you, I know nobody's going to memorize 32 pages. But I like the idea that this is pretty detailed. And I think in the end, it'll help those who are trying to defend themselves and say, I've been ethical, rather than hurt them. I mean, that's my own sense.
Any other thoughts?
Right. Also, in the couple pages, Denny asked for more definitive definitions. So one possibility is to actually define a benefit strictly in terms of the dollar amount and also in terms of a gift put in the $100 limit to make it more definitive is another option we have. Just shows you in the next couple pages an effort to try and add less haziness and more definitiveness is one possible you guys can consider. And finally, including what Denny had asked, you also have to see a shorter one. So attached is a 15-page ethics policy.
Smaller type.
The ethics that is required by the charter, and then added to it was the Board of Ethics Article 2 section as an alternative that Denny wanted to be a shorter one. Something else you might consider.
Thank you very much. All right, moving on, number three, discussion of proposed Chapter 24, taxation of the city territories and ordinance.
Another thing that's on a fairly short time frame is taxation. This code we'll put out there to get input on, but what it covers is ad valorem tax, the hotel motel tax, the motor vehicle excise tax, the rental motor vehicle excise tax, and the financial institution tax, and the insurance premium. This is designed to cover some of these taxes that we need to file this year. So we're trying to get it out to your consideration early and have the public look at it so it can be adopted prior, you know, one of the next ones we adopt in the relatively near future.
And these, the tax rates, like the 3% on the rental, come from the cab?
That comes from state law.
State law. Are all these state law?
Yes, I believe all of them are what is set in state law, except like the hotel motel. The cab has a 5%. We can adopt the 5%. None of these are actually required, but if you are going to adopt them, the rates are defined by state law.
Except hotel motel, which is 5% again.
That is still defined by state law. They have various categories. If you fall into one of the categories, you know, anyone could do 3, but if you want to go to 5, then you have to fit in one of the categories and then use the surplus only in certain specified areas.
All right. We have had a first reading on this, right?
No, we have not.
We have not.
We have not had a first reading. It's the first discussion of it, just putting out there. The public has not seen this one yet, but I'm sure it'll be on a website or two here very shortly. Well, it has been.
It has been.
It has been, so we have had some feedback already.
In fact,
I've got a multi-page feedback already.
I've already given some feedback, minor typos, and I did notice that the hotel motel taxes, which can only be used for specific things, wasn't really specifically spelled out in this section.
Now, this does what Robert said, if it had to use per the OCGA requirement.
Correct.
And it was not actually spelled out. I can go and cut and paste and put in.
Thank you.
You know, the percentages throughout here, you're mandated by state law, you just said, Brian, is that also the percentages that DeKalb County has been charging?
Yes, these are the ones that
DeKalb County. We're not charging more anywhere.
No, these are what DeKalb County, and that's what we're choosing.
Is it also a law that the rental motor, for the rental tax, it says it has to be used for public safety, pedestrian, sidewalks, traffic?
There is a specified use in it. This is more specified than what the law is. We can go and change it to just what the law says. The law is like tourism, public safety, you know, that kind of advice. If you specify it a little bit more, it's easier to make sure that it's going to pass muster.
Where did this one come from? The word you just talked about.
The word that came from DeKalb? No, that came from Johns Creek.
Hmm. That's page 7C.
Yeah, that came from Johns Creek.
So I'd suggest you maybe take the more lenient wording, latitude on it.
We could put in the wording from the statute.
All right, any other thoughts? All right.
Well, that's it. We're going to wait for
executive. So I'm sorry, John.
I have one small point. I found that there is a grant proposal possible for the city of Dunwoody. The Safe Route to Schools is a grant offered by the state government, which is really a pass-through by the federal government. It's a $500,000 grant, and there's a meeting Thursday morning down at the Georgia Department of Transportation that I'll be attending. I've put some word out to the community, and I'm looking for volunteers at grant proposals, grant writing, to review the requirements on the Safe Route to Schools to see if we can get some more sidewalks, some more bike paths, something to enhance our community. We have a school opening on Womack Road that needs major improvement in order to have the entrance of that school open a year from now. So I'm looking to attend a meeting on Thursday, see if we can get up to $500,000 of grant money.
Right.
So let's see.
Yeah, I think we are working with a lady from Johns Creek, Patty Hanson, who does their public safety grants and all that. I can just put you in touch with her and see if that fits into what they do, because she does that full-time for them.
I will probably be putting out, finding a room tomorrow somewhere in the Dunwoody community, try to have a meeting quickly tomorrow night to get a few of the like-minded people together, discuss the proposal, and then go down and actually see what the state has to say on whether we're eligible for the grant or not. Safe Route to Schools it has a number of components to it, some of which the city of Dunwoody has not had in place. For example, speed enforcement in school zones. The city of Dunwoody hasn't had speed enforcement in school zones, so I'm not sure if we're eligible for the grant coming up. But we're going to see if that's possible. So I'm going to get a group of like-minded people together, hopefully tomorrow night.
You want to be at the farmhouse?
If it's the farmhouse is available, it'll be at the farmhouse tomorrow night.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Any other discussion? All right, we're going to break for executive session.
Make a motion. Move. We go into executive session.
Move.
Second.
All in favor? Any opposed? All right. We'll break for executive session. We talked about personnel issues.
We shall find another room, I believe.